Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. Today's program will be another in my Framing Our Democracy series. My guest is Jeff Cohen. Cohen is a journalist, media critic, lecturer, and columnist. He is a founding director of the Park Center for Independent Media and associate professor of journalism, both at Ithaca College. His columns have appeared in many national magazines and newspapers, including the LA Times, the Washington Post, and the Boston Globe. He is author of several books, including Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media. And welcome to the show.
Nice to be with you.
Yeah, glad to have you back. Now, let's talk about the election, the media, the press, the fake news. I want to begin with this. The Shorenstein Center on Media, Politics, and Public Policy did an autopsy report on the 2016 election and concluded that the media totally failed the voters. So let's talk about that.
Well, in the Shorenstein Center report particularly said that the media coverage really was to Trump's advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And what that study and several other studies have focused on correctly is the primaries.
Mm-hmm.
That in the primary season, remember, there were about 17 Republican candidates. For the first time in history, and it doesn't happen in real democracies, one candidate got more coverage than all the other candidates combined.
Unbelievable,
so,
isn't it?
And you know, you hear some apologists for the mainstream TV news saying, well, he was saying outrageous things. He had to be covered. And not all of that coverage was positive. A lot of it was negative. Well, what Trump was trying to do was, without spending any money on ads,
mm-hmm.
communicate that I'm the craziest right-winger in the bunch. I want to ban all Muslims. I want to build a wall. You know, you think they're tough on immigration? I'm building a wall. So he was communicating exactly the message he wanted to exactly the primary voters he wanted to reach. And frankly, Jeb Bush and the others had no chance. Once the media decided, like in a good study is the summer of 2015, where it's really heating up. And the main thing you need in a crowded primary is attention. And on the three nightly news shows, Trump got 60 minutes on the three nightly news shows, and all other candidates, Democratic and Republican, and there were almost 20 at that point, they got less than 60 minutes, all the others combined.
You know what else I heard, Jeff? I heard that a lot of the press are apologists because they say that Donald Trump is the one that let himself be accessible. Since
it's
when
absurd.
Was that ever a criterion?
Right, and
know?
It's not true. I mean, Bernie Sanders was acceptable. The
amazing... Accessible.
Yeah. The way to look at the primary season is that you had two big news stories. One of them was this candidate was coming out of nowhere on the left that most people hadn't heard of named Bernie Sanders, an actual senator who knew policy issues.
Yeah.
The other candidate was this media celebrity coming up on the right. Bernie's rallies were even bigger than Trump's rallies. So it almost gives you a case study if the media are not biased. If the media are not biased in favor of wealth and power and celebrity, they would have, you know, and the Bernie story is more interesting for me because when I worked in TV news and, you know, I worked in cable news, all we obsessed on was the demo. How many viewers do we have within the ages of 25 to 54?
54, yeah.
Bernie was the demo story. So, but when you compare the minutes during this period, Bernie and by the way, both were saying things that were not normally heard in mainstream media.
No,
Trump
absolutely.
was demonizing groups, and Bernie was saying, "Hey, we can have universal health care. Hey, we can have free public college education, and here's who we will tax to pay." So it's almost a case study in bias that, you know, this group called Media Quant did a survey. It was in the New York Times that Trump got the equivalent of like $2 billion of coverage.
Oh, yeah.
And Bernie Sanders got the equivalent of $300 million. It wasn't even close.
There's no question. Anybody who was following this, I had so many people write to me and say, Tish, why is CNN, why is MSNBC showing his entire speech with absolutely no analysis, no counterpoint?
Well, you've pointed to one of the many Trump privileges.
Yeah.
Trump was privileged that every time he opened his mouth or went to a podium, it became breaking news on MSNBC and CNN. And remember, they're supposed to be the, quote, liberal channels.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And and that was a privilege no other candidate had. Another privilege that Trump had was on the Sunday shows. Again, these are all statistical. There's no debating.
Yeah. He would call in and they'd take his calls no matter what was happening.
Right. He had the phone in. He could literally phone it in. Up through March of 2016, and that's pretty deep into the primary season, he had 29 phone-ins with the Sunday shows. That's ABC, CBS, NBC, or Fox, or CNN. And no other candidate had won. So there were all these special privileges given to Trump. Was all the coverage positive? No.
No, it wasn't.
But in the primary, he was saying what he wanted to say. He was getting criticized by the people he wanted to be criticized by. And it basically wasn't a Democratic exercise. And the main group to blame is mainstream TV news.
Oh,
and by
yeah.
the way, Fox was not as bad as MSNBC and CNN because Fox during the primary season had to cover all the Republican choices or there would have been complaints. Whereas CNN and MSNBC, all they cared about was ratings with the guy who is getting them ratings without attacking anyone in power. Whereas Bernie could have gotten them big ratings with a younger group, but he talks about the fracking companies. He talks about the big banks.
He talks about real issues.
And pharmaceutical companies. Those are major sponsors of TV news.
I know the conglomerates and the big media companies are to blame for some of this because their priority is ratings and money and stuff. But how much do you think individual reporters and journalists are at fault in this? Because, you know, some of them seem to have forgotten that they're not supposed to be friends with people in power or popular with people in power. Talk to us about where do you think journalists fell.
There's no doubt that obviously the people that own these companies, Les Moonves, has made the famous comment. He's the CEO of CBS at the beginning of 2016 where he said, this election circus may not be good for the country, but it's great for CBS. The money's rolling in. We're having fun. Keep going, Donald. Get out there, Donald.
Yeah, I remember
all right.
that.
And then you have the top. I think you're pointing to a good point that the more powerful elite journalists want to be cozy with power. And while they might have had private misgivings, they knew if they were too tough on Trump, he could give the interview to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And your bosses at a cable news channel or at a broadcast news outlet, they're going to be upset if you don't get Trump. So there is this willingness to cozy up to someone, even if you think he's a little dangerous. You have to cozy up to power if you're an access journalist. That's why I'm such a proponent of independent media.
Oh, absolutely.
They don't believe they need to rub shoulders with the people in power in order to report on the people in power. In fact, you can often be more critical reporting on the people of power if you're not, you know, rubbing shoulders. And I show a video in my journalism class, July 4th, 2015, where Martha Raddatz, one of the most powerful reporters at ABC News, and Mark Halperin from Bloomberg, formerly at Time, where they're going up on July 4th at the Iowa State Fair in the Trump helicopter, and they're taking selfies with him. And I show it to my class. This is what journalists do not do in a democracy.
Yeah. And I saw Mark Halperin do that quite often during this campaign, and I know he got criticism for that, but I was watching as well, and it was quite remarkable
to
see.
You can name a bunch of them that were cozying up for a while. Don Lemon was really close. Charlie Rose was one of the people that took the phone-ins from Trump. You know, a normal candidate has to go to a camera, but there's the Trump exception. And an outsider, someone from another country, looking at what happened in 2015 and 2016 would say, do these journalists believe in democracy and fair play at all, or are they just pure entertainment?
Yeah, well, they are pure entertainment. Obviously, that's what happened. The marketplace of ideas became Trump speeches, you know?
Yes.
I mean, it was unbelievable. The other thing that the Shorenstein Center report said that there was hardly any covering of real policy.
Right.
During this campaign.
And that also benefited Trump. If all you do is cover polls, and remember, Trump would make 10 minutes of the opening of every speech was about how good he's doing in the polls.
Oh, yeah, and how many times he's been on Time Magazine.
Right. So if all you cover is horse race and polls and crowd size and you don't cover the idiotic policies of some of the candidates, not just Trump, but others, including Democrats, if you're not doing that kind of policy research, that really benefits Trump because he did have a media celebrity profile to begin. He did have big crowds. He did do surprisingly well in the polls. And that became very positive coverage from Trump just because mainstream media covers horse race and not policy.
Yeah. And if they had covered policy, he would have flopped.
Because he doesn't know
policy. Even if he knows anything, he doesn't know how to speak in complete sentences.
Right.
I fear for that aspect.
Well, you'll remember there's key moments where someone would ask him policy questions like, what about the triad, meaning the nuclear missiles that can be launched from land, sea, or air? And he clearly did not know what it is. And, you know, you shouldn't be allowed to run for president if you don't know basic information that a 10th grade civic student would know.
Yeah. You know, one of the other major roadblocks to the public getting any kind of concrete information was this false equivalency thing that kept happening in regard to Clinton and Trump, especially later in the campaign. Yeah. Talk to us about that. I mean,
yeah, it's a nightmare. Constant. It's a nightmare, and it's something that we criticize in our journalism, in my journalism class at Ithaca College. Sometimes when you impose a balance on a situation that is totally imbalanced, you aren't doing a service to your readers or viewers. You're distorting the news.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for years and years, we had this problem where, you know, 95% of climate scientists said it's a real thing and it's dangerous and it's human produced. And a few people, often funded by the oil companies, or oil and gas, and they'd make a debate out of it like it was a 50-50 thing.
Yeah.
That misleads your viewers or listeners or readers.
That's and, a great example, too. I always saw the absent-minded professor from the oil companies.
Right.
He was the...
Right. You get someone from a community college in Oklahoma, not to cast aspersion on that state. But and then so during this the last couple months of the election, there was an effort to just keep talking about the email server of Hillary Clinton. And, you know, I mean, Trump had so many worthy avenues for critical journalism and investigation. And Hillary basically had the email server and the speeches to Goldman Sachs that she was covering
up. And Benghazi.
Benghazi faded a little near the end. But yeah, there's always, and Trump was saying things that were demonstrably false hour after hour. So in order to make it seem like it's balanced, even though that would distort things for, they'd have to find something that where Hillary had stretched the truth.
And
that's not journalism. Journalism is a pursuit of the truth. If some candidate, and there, by the way, a great reporter was for the Toronto Star. Mm. His whole beat was all of Trump's falsities. And in Toronto...
He must have stayed pretty busy.
Yeah, he's sort of become a folk hero to some fellow journalists, because in Toronto, they didn't have to do the balancing. They didn't have to do some of the games that so-called objective elite journalism does in our country. Mm. But yeah, the false equivalence where you try to impose a balance where the story is really imbalanced, you're distorting the news. And it happens all the time in our corporate mainstream media.
It
happens on PBS.
Yeah.
Well, it's a misunderstanding of the notion of objectivity and
remember the equal
fairness.
Time stuff that used to happen?
Right.
Is that part of it, too?
No, I don't think so.
Stuff?
I think it's purely a journalistic code that says you give voice to the Republican, you give voice to the Democrat, you exclude all others, and if you're giving voice to the two main parties, you're balanced. And therefore, you don't have to pursue, what if both party leaders are wrong? Over the last decades, it's been a narrowing and narrowing of what journalism is, and it becomes he said, she said, where, okay, the Democratic leaders say this, the Republican leaders say that, and I'm washing my hands of it as a journalist to try to tell you who's right or whether they're both right or they're both wrong.
Yeah.
That's what's been lost. So it's this always the elevation of balance over truth.
Yeah.
Well, a purported balance.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? I mean, how much does the listener and the follower of this kind of journalism have to take responsibility? You know, a lot of people complain about how the people who are voting for Trump and are Trump fans are undereducated, low information. I mean, how much is the culture leaning toward this as well, not just...
Well, we're all leaning toward it, and it's not just the undereducated or low information working class voter that voted for Trump. I believe that all of the electorate needs a consciousness raising to be more skeptical of everything they hear in the media or see in the media, including from NPR and PBS and the New York Times. Everyone needs to raise their level of skepticism.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jeff Cohen. He's the director of the Park Center for Independent Media, and this is one of my Framing Our Democracy series. We're talking about the 2016 election and media. Let's talk about the fake news and the hoaxes, and that was part of the paradigm, too, of what happened.
Oh, it played a role. There's no doubt I don't like the phrase fake news. To me, there's news and there's hoaxes.
Uh-huh.
But there's no doubt that Trump benefited from internet hoaxes. It was intense. And, you know, one of the big hoaxes, and you can measure this. BuzzFeed, by the way, did a great job on measuring how many people had access to the actual news, real important journalism that was done during the election, compared to how many had access to the hoaxes. And the hoaxes got far more currency online.
What was the interpretation for what real news was? What was
it? It would be stories from the Washington Post that were, or New York Times, or something that was well documented
and really investigated.
Yeah. Serious news, serious journalism. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was, some of it was critical of Hillary Clinton. A lot of it was critical of Trump. But it was serious news that every voter should have heard.
Yeah,
instead, they had more access online to the hoaxes. One of the hoaxes was that the Pope had endorsed Trump.
Oh, I remember that. That was huge.
Yeah. Another one was...
What about that pizzeria where Hillary was supposed to be having some kind of a...
Yes, that Hillary Clinton and John Podesta were doing a sex trafficking operation out of a well-known pizza restaurant in Washington, D.C. That became so believable that a guy went with a gun and shot up the restaurant.
Yeah.
It's called hashtag Pizzagate. But again, these were shared by the millions. Another hoax that was really important was, you know, these protesters at the Trump rally, well, they're getting paid $3,500 to go and protest.
Yeah.
Now, we know who the hoaxer, a lot of them, it's hard to figure out who originated the hoaxes. Almost all of the hoaxes benefited Trump, and they were circulated to millions of voters. We know who circulated, who concocted the hoax that the Democrats were paying $3,500. It was sort of a frustrated comic in Arizona named Paul Horner, who was making $10,000 a month through posting things online. And the more money he made was based on how many eyeballs he could attract. And what he learned over time, and again, he's a comic who didn't particularly like Trump in any way. He just, but he said, when you say, when you write these, he thought they were funny stories. When you write these funny stories, you concoct these alleged phony news stories. The Trump people never fact check. All they do is post and share. And it made this comic in Arizona, Paul Horner, rich. And so that hoax about the being paid to protest at Trump and disrupt Trump rallies, it was retweeted by the campaign manager for Trump. It was retweeted by Ann Coulter. It was retweeted by Donald Trump Jr. So there is no doubt that alternative facts circulating in the internet and in the guise of news stories that were really internet hoaxes, that that did play a significant role, which is why Trump had to disempower the phrase fake news. So when any mainstream reporter was critical of him right before the election, certainly after he got elected, he would just say, well, that's CNN's fake news, or that's fake news from the failing New York Times. So he's done his best to try to disempower that phrase, because everyone understood that, wow, these hoaxes on the internet that purport to be news, they really helped Trump win.
But they still are.
Oh, Jeff. No doubt.
I mean, obviously, this is a man who also tweets fake
hoaxes. He believes this
hoaxes.
Stuff. Right. He believes the stuff he sees on Breitbart.
The stuff about Obama that's still reverberating right now?
There's no doubt. He gets a lot of his news from Alex Jones, who's a conspiracy monger, Alex Jones. He gets a lot of it from Breitbart. And he gets stuff from Fox News that just ain't true. And that's his base of information. And it's very scary.
It's really dangerous to have the commander-in-chief.
Well, he's always been a conspiracy monger. Donald Trump has always believed in conspiracies. He believed in the birther, that Obama wasn't born in the U.S.
Well, he was one of the orchestrators of the birther.
Yes. Yeah, he jumped on it and became its biggest proponent. But again, when he says things like when he tweets, and this is almost word for word, the theory of global warming was created by and for the Chinese to make U.S. manufacturing non-competitive. That was his tweet.
Yep.
Again, conspiracy theory, no truth to it, but I'm sure he believes it. He could pass a lie detector test on some of these conspiracies that Donald Trump believes. And part of it is, I mean, I remember when he was circulating the one that his then top opponent within the Republican primary, Ted Cruz's dad, was involved in the JFK assassination.
Exactly, yeah.
And when
Harvey
he was pressed
Oswald,
on it, he said, what do you mean? National Enquirer is credible.
I still am aghast when I think that the president of the United States is thinking in those kinds of terms. Now, so here we are. You know, we have this man as the commander-in-chief. What do we do now? You have said that you think independent journalism is going to probably save us in some way.
Well, it's the most important thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't trust CNN. These networks that helped elect him, they got to cozy up to him. They want him on their shows. You can't
trust.
And
they're still run by the corporate gods.
Yeah. There's no doubt that the corporate conglomerates, the owners, want to see Trump on those channels. So if you're doing journalism, Trump won't come. So they can't do journalism in a lot of those channels. Independent media is the most important. I mean, you can count on mainstream news to challenge Trump's accuracy only on non-policy stories.
You're talking about TV news, right? Because TV it seems news. To me that, the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Atlantic, some of these things have really risen
to the
occasion.
They've been doing some good journalism. But again, when I look at the Post and the Times and that original case study where you had a candidate on the left, Bernie Sanders and a candidate on the right, and the New York Times and Washington Post, their bias against Bernie Sanders was almost more profound than their bias against Donald Trump.
I agree. But now after the election, it almost seems like they are
they're
trying
doing
to
a little
do
better.
More investigative
they're doing better.
In-depth.
Yeah, it's just, it's not as good as, I mean, I would tell people, if you want to know what's going on in the era of Trump, you've got to be listening and watching Democracy Now!, The Intercept, The Young Turks, The Nation, Alternet, Common Dreams, Truth Out, Truth Dig. These are non-corporate. Mm-hmm. They're digging stuff up every day. They aren't in bed with the Democratic Party leadership. They're independent of both parties. Mm-hmm. And I think you can trust them more than the New York Times or the Washington Post or NPR or the Atlantic. That's my view. I study the media for hours a day, and that's my conclusion.
How do you think that we can make sure that this truthful media that's really digging in will get a far reach in this
country?
It's, because
all of these outlets are growing.
We're in trouble right now,
yeah,
I think.
There's no doubt. Media is in trouble. Trump despises journalists who actually do journalism. By the way, he doesn't despise the media as a whole. If it wasn't for the media, there'd be no Donald Trump.
He's addicted to getting coverage.
Yeah, and he knows how to do it. He's known how to do it for decades. So, you know, if it wasn't for the mainstream media, Trump wouldn't be the president. He's only against those people in the mainstream media that do journalism, which unfortunately is a smaller and smaller percentage of the whole. Mm-hmm. Gossip columnists have always helped him. Entertainment media has always helped him. Jeff Zucker, who's now the head of CNN and was the head of NBC Entertainment, if there's one single media figure that helped Trump be president, I'd say it's Jeff Zucker, who's now the head of CNN. But, I mean, what do we do about elevating independent media? They are growing, and they're growing fast. Many of these are nonprofits that rely on your donations. Mm-hmm. They rely on you to get on social media, and you see something on Democracy Now! Or The Intercept or Alternet or Truth Dig, circulate it. You know, the people who were circulating these internet hoaxes that made Trump look good and said Hillary invented ISIS, those are hoaxes. But there's serious journalism being dug up in these nonprofit outlets, Mother Jones, for example.
Oh, yeah.
And if you see a story that is astounding to you, it's not enough to read it and tell your spouse or
your circle of friends on Facebook. Yeah.
Really, get out and circulate it and fund it. Outlets require funding and donations. What's interesting is after Trump get elected, the nonprofit groups that work on the environment or civil liberties or Planned Parenthood, they went through the roof.
Oh, I know.
Millions and millions of dollars.
ACLU.
Yes, they all went through the roof. And independent media really needs that kind of a boost at this time. You can rely on them more than you can mainstream, even print. And you singled out some of the better print.
Yeah. How has the internet helped or destroyed some of this? I mean, to me, the internet has been great for opinion voices, but it hasn't been investigative journalism by any stretch. But how can we use it now?
Right. Well, but if it wasn't for the internet, Democracy Now! Could not have boomed. Remember, a big turning point in independent media was the failure of mainstream media, and this includes the front pages of the New York Times and the editorial pages of the Washington Post, which were promoting the invasion of Iraq for President Bush. It was a real turning point, and independent media really grew from that point on because the New York Times, the Washington Post, certainly TV news, lost this aura of credibility.
Oh, yeah.
And so without the internet, these independent outlets could not grow. I mean, they are either internet native, or if they're broadcast, they can't build their broadcast without the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the internet is crucial, and it's important that my belief, the single biggest freedom of the press issue is not that Trump is polarizing with CNN or the New York Times. It's that he wants to end net neutrality.
I was going to bring that up.
Oh, okay.
Let's talk about net neutrality right now because people are scared to death. It's going to destroy independent journalists.
Yes, independent media will be wiped out. Breitbart will not be wiped out. Net neutrality simply means that these three or four companies that provide most of the internet to almost everyone in this country, AT&T, Verizon, Comcast, and Time Warner / Spectrum, they will now, if Trump succeeds in ending net neutrality, and he's appointed Ajit Pai to be the chair of the Federal Communications FCC, Commission, yeah, who's committed to getting rid of net neutrality. This will lead to a rebellion. There will be sit-ins in federal buildings across the country. This is going to be a huge fight. It'll probably happen this summer. But if you end net neutrality, it means that all of these independent news outlets that I've been mentioning can be shoved into a slow lane. And in the fast lane will be those news outlets that these internet providers own, or that pay them, or that they favor. So Comcast, internet provider, owns NBC, MSNBC, CNBC. They don't have to worry. They're going to be in the fast lane. Breitbart will be in the fast lane. But the websites that are doing critical independent reporting will be pushed in a slow lane. And if you have trouble accessing them, you're going to end up going to the corporate, commercial, or conservative media. And so net neutrality is the ultimate freedom of the press issue. And it's a battle that will be beginning heavily within a few months.
Yeah, that's one issue, yeah, that I hope will get more coverage, too, because, yeah, it's scaring a lot of people.
Well, what's interesting is the last time Obama had appointed someone to chair the FCC who'd been a lobbyist for the telecommunications companies in the cable TV industry, mm-hmm, and that guy made a move toward a two-tiered internet, doing away with net neutrality. It led to an insurrection, and it led to so many people contacting the FCC that their computers melted down. And you might remember the great rant from the investigative comic John Oliver on HBO in support of net neutrality. That helped a lot, too. I expect John Oliver to come out of retirement. It says something, by the way, about TV news, that the best investigative journalists on TV are not in news, they're in comedy.
Yeah,
it's people like Colbert,
yep,
it's John Oliver, it's Seth Meyers.
John Stewart.
Yeah, yep, it was John Stewart. Yeah. I mean, Colbert every night now on CBS is doing a 10-minute monologue making fun of, in a more, often with data, with quotes, with video, sound bites from Team Trump, and it's much more insightful and incisive than CNN or MSNBC, in my view.
Oh, that's so amazing. It's like, yeah, Saturday Night Live, you know, yeah, they just come equipped with the facts, and they've got, yeah, great satire, great information.
Right. Right.
Jeff, we're almost out of time. Can you just tell me really briefly what the Park Center for Independent Media, which you are the director of,
yeah,
are you doing anything new in,
yeah,
light of,
well,
the new
culture? Always, we always get, we're trying to get journalism students to think about a career working in the independent outlets. We bring great speakers to campus like Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, Naomi Klein, Juan Gonzalez of Democracy Now!, Jeremy Scahill from The Intercept, mm-hmm, Glenn Greenwald from The Intercept. We've brought all sorts of people from The Nation. Every year we have the Izzy Award named after IF Izzy Stone, Outstanding Achievement in Independent Media, where we bring the top reporter or two or three from that year. So it's basically just a center that tries to study and talk about independent, non-conglomerate,
yeah,
media.
Yeah, you guys are doing a great job. We
do
need you. Jeff Cohen, thank you so much for joining us. Again, I've been talking to Jeff Cohen from the Park Center for Independent Media at Ithaca College. He is the director, and this is one of our Framing Our Democracy shows. Thank you so much, Jeff.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outoboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.